Okay, with that, April, papers 12A and 12B.
Thanks, Wayne. Both the papers deal with a structured entity that is created to lease a single asset to a single lessee. Agenda paper 12A concerns a structured entity that is the lessor of an operating lease. The submitter asks whether the lessee's right of use of the asset and its purchase option under the lease give the lessee power over the structured entity. The question hinges on identifying the relevant activities of the structured entity. And, of course, relevant activities are those activities that most significantly affect the entity's returns. There are two views put forward by the submitter. View A is that the lessee's right to use the leased asset affects the residual value of the leased asset and consequently the returns of the structured entity. In view A, the lessee therefore directs the relevant activity of the structured entity. View B, and now in any lease, the right of use of the leased asset under this view doesn't give you power over the structured entity. The submitter notes that the lease will contain covenants to ensure that the lessee doesn't damage the leased asset. And so in accordance with view B, you identify the relevant activities as monitoring default of the receivable and managing the sale of the leased asset at default, or if the lessee doesn't exercise the purchase option. We conducted outreach on this topic, and we did it at the same time as the submission under 12A. And in paragraph 33, we note the results of the outreach. A number of people thought it was too early. There was no evidence of any diversity in practice. They made the note that you'd have to do a careful analysis of the facts, and it'd be on a case-by-case basis. And they weren't sure that they had enough information to do that. There was little or no support for view A as a result of outreach. Some people also thought that because IAS 17 is a more detailed and specific standard than IFRS 10, that it would actually be definitive in interpreting this. Because there was no evidence of diversity in practice or reporting, we did two things. We asked the submitter if they had any examples, and they weren't able to provide that to us because of confidentiality concerns. We also looked at a review of published financial statements where we thought these transactions were likely to take place. And the review of the seven entities that we found where we expected or knew that this type of transaction would occur didn't expect any significant change to occur on the application of IFRS 10. We then went on to our own staff analysis, which is in paragraphs 42 to 61, and here we looked at the significance of the lease being an operating lease. Now, of course, IAS 17 is drafted in terms of risks and rewards, and IFRS 10 is based on control, but even so, we think it's unlikely that the right to use a leased asset granted by either a finance or an operating lease would be unlikely to transfer power over the relevant activities of the lessor to the lessee. There could always be other arrangements outside the normal terms of the lease, such as guarantees, but we're unaware of any such terms. We also note in the analysis that the other requirements of control would need to be met. In paragraphs 58 to 61 in the paper, we propose that the returns of the the structured entity are likely to arise from realizing the residual value of the asset, managing the credit risk of the lease receivables, and the financing risks on the interest flows. We think it unlikely that the lessee would have power over these relevant activities. Mm-hmm. So in the assessment against our agenda criteria at paragraph 62, we think that we have not seen any evidence of diversity in practice, and we would think that if you had all the details, the standards give sufficient guidance for you to make the consolidation assessment. So the recommendation for the staff is that this issue isn't taken on the agenda. Do you agree with that recommendation, and do you have any suggestions on the wording?
Comments? Andrew?
I do agree with the recommendation. I don't think we really have nearly enough facts to make the analysis here, particularly around the purpose and design of the vehicle, the terms of any maintenance type provisions that the lessee has taken on, and the terms of the purchase option in particular. And I tend to think, speculative, that have we had all those facts, then IFRS 10 does give you the tools to do the job, to make the assessment. Regarding the agenda decision itself, just a couple of suggestions. I do think it should perhaps refer to the purchase option, because the issue becomes, seems to me, be rather trivial if there was no lessee purchase option, even if we don't know the terms of it in the submission. And also, I kind of sympathise with the view that if it's an operating lease under IAS 17, most likely the lessee doesn't control the vehicle. But is this just suggesting a bit too much? They're kind of mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
So maybe we could just tone down any such implications somewhat, take it down a notch. But
yes, I think
fine.
That'd be a good idea.
You give us some drafting suggestions to accomplish that. Tony?
I can give you, I guess, my drafting session immediately. I agree with pretty much everything Andrew said. I think IFRS 10 does give you the information and the framework in order to make the decision when you have all the information. I thought the reference, the final sentence of the second paragraph read a bit like a rule. So I guess my drafting suggestion would be to take it out altogether.
Yeah.
So you take out it also concluded?
Yep. Because what it says, the IFRIC has concluded that in pretty much every case, under IFRS 10, the lessee isn't going to have the rights sufficient to give it control. And that reads a bit like a rule. I think we're saying in one breath we need all the information to make the analysis, and then in another breath, well, it almost doesn't matter because it's an operating lease, so it would never arise. So I'd almost use the same words we're using for the second agenda decision to say that there's enough in IFRS 10 to be able to do the analysis, not aware of any diversity in practice.
Can you conceive of an operating lease that would...
Yeah, you
can
think of...
I... To me, it didn't read like a rule. It read like a, gee, this is going to have to be awful hard. Laurence?
I have exactly the same concerns as Andrew and Tony, and my drafting suggestion is exactly the same as Tony, that is delete that last sentence. You don't know what are in those operating lease contracts. What if there is an option at the end of the term in the lessees that gives priority to the lessee to repurchase the assets. Maybe you may still have concluded that it's an operating lease because it's perhaps not likely to be exercised today, but still it exists, it's there. So because we don't have enough information about that lease contract and all the rights that the lessees may have with the contracts, I cannot conclude at the end one way or the other, but I do believe, like Andrew and Tony have explained, that IFRS 10 gives us enough details and guidance to apply your reasoning and make a proper assessment.
Sue, board member privilege.
I'd agree with everything that people are saying. I'd even go actually a step further, because I think that a lease probably typically wouldn't lead you to an assessment of control, because it's about the right to use a particular asset. It's a risks and reward analysis in particular in 17 at the moment, and 10's telling you to look at whether you've got the power to make decisions about an entity that relate to its relevant activities. So I think it's good to delete that sentence, but in my thinking I would even go further and say just the lease on its own terms, whether it's a finance or an operating lease, typically wouldn't in itself be relevant. In relation to the comments about the interaction between 17 and IFRS 10, I'm glad that people are saying that they didn't like that sort of implication in here of the sort of mirroring approach or the consequence of mutual exclusivity. Because I think it's quite dangerous. You could have a situation where you have an operating lease with somebody, but then you own 51% of the voting shares. Nobody would question the fact that you should consolidate the entity, nor would they question the operating lease analysis. It's two different assessments. So it's good, I think, to de-emphasize that.
Now, I think the only place the term operating lease appears is the sentence that's proposed to be deleted. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Bruce? Oh, Philippe, did you want to come in?
I just wanted to react to what Sue said. I don't disagree, but let's assume the structured entity is a autopilot. It has no voting rights. It's just set up on autopilot, and the assessment of control cannot be made on the basis of voting rights, but just on the relevant activities, who control relevant activities. That's the only criteria to assess control for that specific entity. Let's assume further that this lease is fully variable payments based on the usage of the asset. And let's assume you have a purchase option at the end. Would you come easily to the same conclusion that the relevant activities are not controlled by the lessee in that case? I would think twice before I would conclude that. So I think it depends really on the fact patterns here in this contract, the economics of that contract will lead me to conclude that maybe, absent any other evidence, maybe in certain types of contracts, the lessee does control the SPV. Maybe.
So.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that at all. I think that my only thing was, I don't think people should read this paper or think about the analysis and say, I concluded it was an operating lease under IAS 17, therefore I shall conclude I don't control the entity. That was what I don't want people to conclude, which I think you agree with.
Bruce?
Listening to Philippe and Sue, that's exactly the point I was going to make. My concern was that we end up using IAS 17 as an indicator of whether we've got control under IFRS 10, and I don't think that would be the intention. So I was going to say I fully support the staff's paper, but that sentence, that would have to go.
John?
I agree with the staff recommendation. Just one comment on paragraph 50 of the paper seems to imply that the examples in IAS 17 paragraph 10 and the indicators in paragraph 11 are somehow criteria for classification of leases as operating or finance. And obviously they're just indicators and examples. So it's just pointing out.
Okay, Reinhardt, and then I'll go to the phones.
My concern was the same one that Sue and Philippe pointed out about importing the risks and rewards analysis under IAS 17 into IFRS 10, because I don't see that. And I think the real question, the fundamental question that was raised by the paper was whether the use of the asset is a relevant activity. And I think there could be circumstances where the use of the asset by the lessee could be a relevant activity, in which case it factors into the consolidation analysis. I'm happy with deleting that, if we go ahead with deleting that last sentence in that second paragraph.
Charlotte, and then I'll go to the phones.
The only comment I want to have is on Reinhardt's point, which I agree with the analysis and I agree with taking it out, but I suppose the question on leasing SPVs that comes up is, if you had a finance lease, is the control of the asset a relevant activity? And so the nature of the lease may help determine what the relevant activities are, and whether you think that because the asset isn't in the vehicle under a finance lease, so it's not relevant, so the only activities that are relevant are relative to credit, you may come to a different decision than if you think, you know, the accounting analysis for operating lease is that the asset's in the vehicle, so any decisions regarding the asset or relevant activities. I'm not sure we need to explore that there, but it is sort of brushed over, and the discussion of what the relevant activities are is not really focused on.
Okay. Going to the phones now, Fei Long. We may have lost Fei Long. Sandy?
I don't have anything else to add. My comments were similar to those expressed by others, including that last sentence in the second paragraph. So I have nothing else to add.
Okay, the consensus appears to be keep the decision, throw away the sentence. Any disagreement with that? Okay, that's what we'll do. Next paper, April.
Paragraph 12B is another submission, another different structure. Again, the question resolves around what are the relevant activities. Agenda paper 12B, in this submission, the structured entity is financed by a number of lenders, and the lease is a finance lease. The details of the structure are given on page 3 of the paper, and in the case of default, the junior lender has the ultimate right to dispose of the leased asset. The submitter asks whether the junior lender in the arrangement controls the structured entity. And the submitter proposes two views. View A is that the junior lender controls the structured entity based on a view that it's the sale of the leased asset on default that is the activity that has the greatest effect on the returns of the structured entity, and consequently, the junior lender has power over the structured entity. View B takes the view that the right to dispose the asset on default is a protective right which doesn't confer power on the junior lender. Now, outreach was conducted at the same time as that for 12A, and in paragraph 23, we note that the results of that outreach, there was much less information about this type of transaction, which most respondents thought would be quite rare. A number of people, though, did say that they thought that the rights would be protective. There was no clear view as to what the preferred treatment would be. And in the staff analysis on 24 to 39, we consider how to identify the relevant activities of the structured entity. We looked at the significance of the junior lender's right to sell the asset and also considered the other requirements of control. Now, you'll note that the submitter also presented a case B in which the facts have changed slightly so that the lessee doesn't make a payment directly to the manufacturer. In 56, we assessed this against our criteria, and really the result is that we think there's no evidence of diversity in practice. We think that the submission concerns the application of IFRS 10 to a fact-specific transaction, and we think that IFRS 10 contains sufficient information to make that assessment. So the staff recommendation is that we don't take this onto the agenda. Do you agree with that recommendation, and do you have suggestions for the draft rejection notice?
Laurent?
I agree, yeah, we have this on. It is more the drafting of the second paragraph. I'm not sure that this is how we phrased previously, to say don't want to address a specific fact pattern and so on. You know, that it had no evidence that the issue is widespread. Well, that type of issue might be widespread when you change a little bit of the fact pattern and so on. So not sure if this is a good reason. And then it also noted that the submitter was seeking assistance in applying judgment. So particular fact pattern that I would revise to use the type of wording we use to say don't address the specific fact patterns. Shouldn't there be something similar in 12A and 12B to as what was said, in the sense that the classification of a lease under IAS 17 does not drive any particular conclusion in the IFRS 10 assessment, or so on?
We could put something like that, and we did at one time think of putting in just something general to say that we think that under any sort of lease, the right to use the leased asset would be unlikely to give control. But they are two separate assessments, that's quite clear in this discussion.
I guess the point was the previous agenda decision more clearly articulates that notion.
Yeah.
And so maybe we ought to make this one mirror the previous. Charlotte?
I do think it's a wider issue. I mean, it's not just specific to leases, I suppose. It's the loans in general. When do default rights for loans become the important thing on which you look at the consolidation of an SPV? I find it hard that it was considered a narrow issue.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was a narrow issue. I think it's quite a widespread issue, to Charlotte's point. I think it's a question of when the default rights would be considered protective or when they would be the relevant activities. And I suppose going back to a point was made in relation to 12A, I mean, it seems unclear to me in this fact pattern whether the lease classification affects the assessment of what are the relevant activities. In other words, if it's a finance lease, are my relevant activities all related to the default collection of the receivables, whereas if it's an operating lease, are they related to the asset, the physical asset itself, which is what's recognised. So I do think that even though the fact pattern in which it's raised is very narrow and specific and probably not very widespread, I think there's a big underlying question here that could be analysed.
So, board member privilege.
On this point of whether the nature of the lease sort of drives the classification, for me, I think I would say it depends, because it depends on what it was about the lease that led to that classification. So if I look in this fact pattern, when I looked at the purpose and design of the entity, it felt like the whole thing that was going on was really about credit risk, you know, and the fact that they could buy the asset for a dollar at the end or one cash unit at the end meant that it was really all about credit risk, which made it seem like it was very relevant who was managing the sort of consequences of defaults on the receivables. So it took me back to purpose and design. So it was one thing I thought about, but it probably depends on what it is that caused it to get that finance or operating lease classification. So I think it's one thing to think about, not determinative in itself for me, the way I think about it. But I guess the question was, if you think about purpose and design, et cetera, do you have all of the things that you, all the tools again that you need to think through to apply IFRS 10 in a similar way to the 12A paper, would have been more the way I would have come at it in terms of whether it needed to be dealt with or not.
Tony?
Yeah, I think to Sue's point, I thought about it in much the same way as what I thought about the previous paper, which is not so much about whether it's a narrow issue, more about whether or not there is enough in IFRS 10 to be able to make the determination on the assumption you have a complete fact pattern. And I think there's clearly not a complete fact pattern in the submission. And I agree that we shouldn't be dealing with specific fact patterns anyway. And I think my sense is there is enough in IFRS 10 to allow you to make the determination if you have all of the facts. And so I'd be inclined to agree with the staff's recommendation not to take it onto the agenda, but articulate the logic on the basis that there is enough in IFRS 10 to allow you to address the issue.
Okay.
Going to the phones, Sandy.
I don't have anything different than what's already been said.
Fei Long? Okay, we lost Fei Long. My sense is that no, the committee does not want to add this to the agenda, but that it should articulate the rationale in a way similar to the articulation in 12A, which is that we have no evidence that would lead us to believe that the toolkit in IFRS 10 is incomplete. Who would object to that? Charlotte?
My experience is there's not enough information in IFRS 10 or the US equivalent to people to come to the same answer on these things, that people look at rights in the event of a default very differently between entities, between firms. There's no consistency that I've seen in practice, to be honest. So, and many, some of it comes down to, are there any decisions that are going on currently? And if there are decisions that are going on currently, can you look at those rather than decisions that are only in the future, potential ones? And, you know, and who was involved in the setup and all of that? But it's not really a look at IFRS 10. If you've got enough information, you come to the same answer. And, or maybe it should be, but it's not sort of not what's happening in practice.
Okay.
I would say that's in a loan, more of a loan rather than necessarily just a lease one. So.
That's one no vote. Would anyone else adopt Charlotte's view? Okay. You'll see the drafting when you see update.